So there's something interesting about Forgetting Sarah Marshall. The movie is about this guy, Peter, who's getting over one of the biggest breakups he's ever dealt with. He's been dumped by Sarah Marshall. So he has to go forget Sarah Marshall. So he does what he thinks is the best method to do that, which is eventually go on a vacation. And it's a rom-com, so things happen, truths are had, humor is found, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. But what's interesting to me about this movie is, in my romantic history, I haven't really dealt with breakups, and I certainly haven't dealt with significant breakups. I was one of the lucky ones. And yet, in spite of that, this movie is still somehow really relatable to me. It's something that I find really funny, and it has characters that I find so poignant and still so human that I feel like I want to be friends with them, or I am them. And isn't that the great beauty of movies in the first place, is that they aren't you, they're fictional versions of you, and yet they feel like you. And when you're watching them find their triumphs, it's kind of like finding your own triumph, and it's seeing yourself on screen. And there's something kind of awesome about that, and also really fun. And Forgetting Sarah Marshall is a lot of fun. It's really funny, it's really sweet, it's got a lot of good humor, and it's one of Kelly's favorite movies. And so when I watch it, it's something that I can delight in, because I know that this is who he is. Not that he's, you know, Jason Segel, although I think a lot of the times of the day he wants to be, but I just know that this is just for him, and I love it. So it's Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Welcome, everybody, to A Gentleman's Guide to Rom-Coms.
Oh, man, my hair, it feels like Doc Brown's hair. You just blasted it back with your powerful intro.
Bazinga!
Hi.
Kelly,
who are you?
I'm Ryan Graves.
And I am Kelly Song.
Oh, right!
Yeah!
I need to get used to that. Kelly Song.
It feels weird in my mouth, too. Much like my baby's spit, which she sneezed in my mouth earlier today, which, you know, that was my fault. I saw it coming and I was just like, you're being so cute. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, oh, yes, you wait,
it's
sir.
It's the best. So wait, if I'm like explaining you to different people, because
yeah.
Like I was at a job and I was like,
oh, talking me up.
Yeah, I was like, oh, do you know Kelly? And they're like, no. I'm like, oh, he's my best friend, and we have this podcast together. But
I described you in a very similar way last night to somebody who brought us food.
Am I saying, do you know Kelly Song, nay McCrillis, or do I say the artist formerly known as Kelly McCrillis?
I think I'm still known pretty much to the world at large as Kelly McCrillis. I think it's going to take a year of working in the industry again as my new pseudonym in order to, I guess it's not a pseudonym, is it? It's just a new name.
Now is your IMDb name?
I've changed it. I've changed my IMDb. I've changed my, all my like screenplay stuff online. I've changed my screenplays. It's a chore and a half to change.
Yeah.
Your name. I feel bad for anybody who is either gotten married and changed their name or gotten divorced and had to change their name, because it's just it's not a lot of work, but it feels like you're being clerical when you don't want to be clerical.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's fine.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
But I also talked you up, so.
Oh, yeah. All right. To who?
To some
like
people.
A local janitor.
Yeah. I was just like, do you know Kelly? Because when he cleans up, he does like this. So could you be more like Kelly Song?
Are you more of a, like, if you're sweeping, are you more of a push broomer or a sweep back broomer?
I'm more of a like swirler, you know, like,
well, that's like mopping.
Imagine like birds are helping me, like swirly.
You're like a Disney princess kind of. Yeah. I get you.
Yeah.
I can see that. It's all of your golden locks, really, that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Describe that to me in visual motion.
They're flowing. Hey, are you enjoying being back in my house?
Yes. So Ryan and I are recording in person. This is the first time I have been here in a month. Oh
yeah.
My God.
That's not bad. I mean, when I had a baby, it was lockdown, so I didn't go to your house for a year.
That's not true. You came over. Well, you know what?
It was almost.
I came over to your place probably 5 months after lockdown started, but like you didn't come over to mine, not because of lockdown or anything, but because of your baby.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, whatever, I don't want to be bothered. Just come over to my house.
Just come over here because I have a baby.
So speaking of babies, I have a dad admission.
Okay.
Like we're all mission? About being vulnerable here on this show.
Yeah, what's your dad mission?
I dropped not my baby. I dropped
the ball.
I was my baby was sleeping next to me and I was just like, "Oh, you're so cute." And she's like, shh, for once. And I was reaching for my phone because I was like, okay, I need to set an alarm for myself so I know that, like, to go get this thing when I need to go get it. And I, like, was pulling my phone and I was, like, easing it because, you know, you're doing that thing where you're like, don't wake up the baby, don't wake up the baby. And instead of, like, being quiet, I could have just been loud and she would have been fine. But no, instead I had to drop my phone on my baby. It was, like, a 3-inch drop, so it wasn't bad. But it was the most surprising thing because at first I was like, I'm done for. My baby is going to wake up screaming and all the hard work that I just put into keeping her asleep is going to be out the window. But what she did was she got that really sad frown on her face where she was like,
why?
And then I just like pet her head for a second and then she fell right back asleep. And I felt like a magician, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
But I did feel bad also for bonking my baby's head.
Just wait until you have a toddler. And like the other day I was walking him downstairs, but he was like being a toddler where he's like, and he bonked his own head like on a doorpost thing. And it's like, can you calm down, man?
you're killing yourself, kid.
Gotta be careful.
Is there something, like, I know I'm going to have to lean on you for when I feel guilty about doing something with my child.
Because then I have to say, well, this happened to me, so welcome to our club.
What's something that you can tell me that you've done?
Well, Theo did have to go to urgent care, not because I did anything to him, but because I wasn't Johnny on the ball enough with him.
You're like, it's more the door that did something to him.
But he was spinning and he fell on this sharp corner. And it's like, I thought I could have gotten there in time and like prevented him from falling, but it's just kind of like,
you can't be everywhere.
You can't
at once.
Always be there, and you can't be so helicopter where they never have accidents. And now he knows not to spin like that where he spun.
Did he get stitches?
No, he just got glue.
Oh, fun.
Which is nice.
I had to get stitches when I did that thing where I was like being chased and I ran over like a door frame and I tripped head first into a corner of a coffee table. And
when was this, last week?
Yeah. No, it was when I was 4.
Okay.
And so like I had to get stitches.
Oh man.
4 stitches.
Yeah, he does somersaults now, which makes me nervous because I sprained my neck by doing like botched cartwheels, but I did them dumb. I would put all my weight on my head in the mid cartwheel. I would put all my weight on my head and everyone's like, well, you don't do that. I'm like, I'm 6. How am I supposed to know that?
Yeah.
Doctor.
Man, didn't I see kids these days that are 6 who can do cartwheels and I'm still mad at them because I couldn't quite do them back then. And I can kind of today, but I still don't look as good as a 6-year-old.
I'm just
can.
Okay with the next generation being better than us.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's cool.
We should bow to them now.
It's cool. They are the future.
Well, I was going to ask you some questions about this movie, but why don't we just get into the story?
Let's do it.
Tell me a story, Turk.
Let me tell you a story about love, D'Artagnan.
I ask you about love, probably quote me a sonnet.
I'm not much more than an interpreter, and not very good at telling stories.
That's the end.
What do you mean, that's the end? That's not. It's the beginning of something interesting.
Listen, that's the end of that saga.
The end.
You tell me the story, because this is one of your favorites.
Yes, I have a lot of fun watching this movie. This movie is Forgetting Sarah Marshall, written by Jason Segel, directed by Nick Stoller, who has also written things like The Muppets Movie and has directed stuff like Get Him to the Greek, which is technically a sequel to this film.
It's such a weird spinoff.
It is. It's such a weird spinoff. But I can see Russell Brand kind of does steal the show in this movie at times. So I get why studios were like, I want to see more of this gentleman.
It definitely is on one of the top of the list of movies you didn't realize were spinoffs or sequels.
Right, right. It's the last one on the BuzzFeed quiz because they're like, that's right, we have stuff to say about this
yeah,
one.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that was a sequel to that?
Well, I mean, so basically Russell Brand in this movie plays a... we'll get there.
Okay.
So this movie starts off with Jason Segel, who is a composer for TV, and his girlfriend, who is played by Kristen Bell, who is basically playing Kristen Bell. This is like the second version of this that we've seen, the other one being Julia Roberts from Notting Hill playing right. Julia Roberts.
When you first saw this movie, had you watched her other show, Veronica Mars?
Veronica Mars, yes, I had.
You had?
Yeah.
So you were like, okay, I'm already on board with the Kristen Bell train.
So they were actually in the midst of, I think, filming their third season when made. And so I just started getting on that train.
So there's something kind of perfectly meta about it because she's on like a Law & Order CSI kind of show, but she was really doing a CW version of that.
Yeah, well...
It was the WB then.
But. So Veronica Mars is actually way better than CSI, which is what Jason Segel was basing this on because he was on an episode of CSI.
Oh.
But Kristen Bell's being in Veronica Mars does like mirror her detectiveness in a way, although it's, you know, much better written.
Yeah.
But not only that, the writers didn't know she was in a movie called Pulse that was about a cell phone that killed her. And in this movie, they make fun of her for doing this. And it's also meta because she was like, at this point in time, like trying to make that transition to film. And they talk about this character trying to make that transition to film and how scary it is to be an actor who's worried about losing the spotlight.
Yeah.
The day before they filmed that scene where she's talking about the show that her and Jason Segel working on getting canceled was the day that she found out Veronica Mars was getting canceled. So like this,
oh my
there's
gosh.
So much meta happening in this movie.
Well, I haven't seen Veronica Mars, but were they planning on it for going for a while, or did they know it was going to be kind of like a limited? Because
no, I don't think the creators were expecting it to be canceled. It's their third season, I think, is 7 episodes shorter than the rest of the seasons.
It's a bummer.
So I think it's pretty much something where, are you sure it's not a Fox property?
Maybe it was Fox, but it wasn't a show that was like super procedural. It's actually a fun show. That's a mystery show.
It's more of a serial show. Like there are like mysteries per episode.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot bigger arcs than there are in shows like CSI or what are the other shows like that?
NCIS.
NCIS.
Yeah.
Autopsy Investigation, Bones, something like that. It's a much better show. And Robin and I went back and watched it a couple of years ago, actually right when lockdown started, and it's so much. I was going to go back to it and it was going to disappoint me, but it is so worth your time.
Mm-hmm.
Really go back to it. But that's not this movie. That's a TV show.
But I do want to say Robin probably pointed this out that she always points out when good actors do bad acting.
Mm-hmm.
And like Kristen Bell and Billy Baldwin?
I think
one
it's
of the Baldwins. Billy Baldwin?
It's one of them.
They're doing like bad CSI acting, but it's still like good bad, where it's like, I can see this being a real show, but Jason Segel's like, these shows are dumb.
Exactly, yeah. Jason Segel has such a kind bit of satire in him.
Yeah.
Where he's like making fun of a bunch of stuff in this movie, but not in a way that makes me ever like... If I were those shows, I would just be like, oh yeah, I totally get that.
He cuts with a butter knife and it's like, ooh, that's a gentle, that's a gentle jab.
Oh, that would hurt though. That would take so long to get that
it's
cut going.
It's not a clean cut. It's just a little, and you're like, I felt that. I felt it.
Well, he plays this composer and we get that he's kind of a layabout, but not in a bad way. Kind of in a charming, like adult boy kind of way.
So... We see him have this lifestyle of a work from home kind of person. He'll go into the studio to record some stuff, but a lot of the time he's just working from home. And post lockdown, we're like, what's the big deal?
Yeah, this is how everybody
works. It looked so super normal post lockdown. And it looks kind of normal to me now that this past month I'm finally freelance. And so I could just hang out. And I literally went to Target and bought freelance clothes, which were just sweats.
You know, it's funny because Robin, when we were watching this movie, she's like, where are my sweats? I can't find my sweats. And they were in the dryer. And she's like, I'm going to go put some sweats on.
Yeah. And so back in 2008, he does look a little bit of a layabout. So there is a bit of suspension disbelief, like, oh, right. He's not getting out.
Part of that is that he pours like a
box of cereal.
Yeah, a box of cereal into a giant bowl.
Yeah.
Robin was aghast. She was like, that's going to get soggy so fast. but he's, you know, he's just this charming dude. And I actually don't think this movie would work as well without him in the lead role, because he's Marshall from, you know, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. He is the
How I Met Your Mother.
Or How I Met Your Mother. He's, you know, the lead character in The Muppets, which was technically after this movie.
Yeah.
But he is Mr. Charming. He's Mr. Like, if you want a heartthrob that you can also just cuddle with on the couch, he's that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll make you laugh. And so Kristen, basically the movie starts with Kristen Bell coming over and breaking up with him because she's with someone else.
In a now iconic scene, we see his penis.
We see his penis twice.
Or maybe thrice.
Thrice, because at the end of the movie, too.
Right. Which is one of the great joys of this movie, is not necessarily seeing his penis on screen.
Well, that's a joy, too, but go ahead.
It's that I feel like Jason Segel is like finally like, you know, let's just exploit me.
Great.
Let's not exploit these women. Let's make me the butt of the joke, and I'll expose myself, and we don't have to show. I mean, the girls do get a little scantily clad, but it's for the story. But we see mostly Jason Segel over them.
Right. And like, I'd say Russell Brand is equally scantily clad in this movie.
Yeah.
He's clad scantily, which seems like somebody who's a thief in London in like the 1920s. Hey, I'm clad scantily.
Clad scantily at your service.
But speaking of butts, she breaks up with him. This is based on an actual breakup he had.
I figured it feels very autobiographical.
Yeah. Then he enlists the help of Bill Hader, who's his brother-in-law, to like help him get through things.
I thought it was his stepbrother.
No, because
brother-in-law.
I'm pretty sure brother-in-law.
Well, if that was the case, wouldn't he want to be talking to his sister too? Liz?
Probably not.
I don't know. I'm going to challenge you, even though you've seen this movie 100 times. I thought the line was their stepbrothers or something.
Maybe. But either way, Bill Hader is the voice of the audience, because like every time, this movie is produced by Judd Apatow. And as such, it's going to be a little bit crass at times, though I think on the lighter end of an Apatow film.
And I like that it's got the Apatow theater troupe. Like there's a lot of,
you got Jonah Hill,
and there's a lot of other like side characters, like Bill Hader's wife. It's like she pops up in I Love You, Man for a really small role.
Liz Kukowski.
Yeah. And she, like, there's a lot of faces in here. It's like, I know you, I've seen you.
Who is listed as Liz Bretter, and he is Peter Bretter.
Oh, okay. So I guess, but he's a Bretter too. Bill Hader.
Well, Bill Hader's his brother, not a Bretter.
He's a brother, a Bretter.
He is Brian Bretter. I think you're right.
Okay. Good, better, Bretter.
Best. So Jason Segel doesn't know what to do. He ends up sleeping with a bunch of people, one night stands that are all very unsuccessful.
And I like how Bill Hader, his brother, is like, you're being weird. And it's this like, we don't want to slut shame Jason Segel, but we are kind of seeing him in a like tail spiral where it's like, this isn't what you want to be doing, is it?
No. And he's like obviously acting against character. And we as audience live through Bill Hader calling him out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing I like about how they treat Bill Hader's character is that there's lots of movies, and most rom-coms, they do this for the female side and less for the guy side, but the female side, they always have the best friend role, who's just there for a sounding board and has no internal life.
And in this one, Bill Hader is, like, he's also bringing comedy as well.
Yeah.
Him and Liz are bringing comedy to the scene, but he is the sounding board in this movie, which, you're right, we don't see very often.
In the female-centric ones, it's Judy Greer.
Yeah.
Who's totally the sounding board and will do some comedic relief. But like the tragedy when you bring Judy Greer on, it's like, we know she's so much more interesting than this nothing role that you gave her. And we know she's capable of more. But Bill Hader, I don't want to know his internal life. I just like him there as the comedian who's riffing on what's going on.
Yeah, but I think the writing, like Jason Segel's writing, does give him some much more semblance of a personality, because
he has,
you know, Judy Greer is just like, hey, I'm here, I'm going to listen to you, and then I'll make a comment.
Can we please have one conversation that's not about my rack, Michael?
But then he's like, at one point in time, Jason Segel like insults his wife, and he's like, do you want to do this? You want to do this? And he's like, I will end you.
Yeah.
And that there's just more personality there.
It's not the Notting Hill level of depth, but it's just enough.
Yes. Yeah. Especially because this movie's more like a 65% comedy, 35% rom.
Yeah.
Where it's all centered around will they, won't they ness, but it is more focused on the comedy and the filmmaking.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
So basically Jason Segel, after having these one night stands, decides what he's going to do is get away. Mm-hmm. He's going to go to Hawaii because, you know, it's away, and Sarah always talked about it.
So we were watching this with my wife last night. Me being we, the royal we.
Oh, it wasn't you and Theo who invited your wife over?
It was me and Sarah. And I was like, you know, if you dumped me, I totally would take a Hawaiian vacation. And Sarah was like, yeah.
Yeah. She's like, actually, great idea.
She's like, you definitely would. I'm like, please don't encourage this circumstance.
No, but I am that way as well. Having gone through breakups, a trip is perfect. A trip is what you need to reassess your life. And heaven forbid that ever happened. But if so, I'll go with you.
Mm. I would like to have you there.
So he doesn't have anybody there except Bill Hader on the phone, who is yelling at him because he shows up. He finally, after like 15 minutes, meets the eventual love interest, Mila Kunis, mm-hmm. Who is fresh off her That 70s Show days.
Mm-hmm.
And she's working at the hotel. And then he sees that who just happens to be there, but Sarah Marshall, his ex-girlfriend, along with her new boyfriend, Russell Brand.
Mm-hmm. Aldous Snow.
Oh, and what a character mm-hmm. Aldous Snow is. Because I think he's a little overblown, but somehow Russell Brand pulls him off in a way that I'm like, I don't think anybody in the world would act like this except you.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's so much his public persona.
I've lost a shoe. Have you seen it anywhere? It's like this one, but, you know, obviously it's the opposite one. Excuse me, missus. I've lost a shoe, like, this one, it's like this one's fellow, the sort of the exact opposite, in fact, of that.
Uh-huh.
Not an evil version, but just, you know, a shoe like this, but for the other foot, otherwise I'd have two right.
Aldous, this is Peter.
Hey, all right, Peter.
But did you know who was originally going to be cast as this role of
Aldous
Snow?
Oh, no.
Think Lost City of Z.
Robert Pattinson?
No. Oh. One step over.
Charlie Hunnam?
Yeah.
No.
The reason why is because him and Jason Segel are best friends.
What?
Or at least they were at the time. And during the table read, Charlie Hunnam, and the role was going to be different though. It was written to be, he was going to be a posh British actor.
Oh.
And then Charlie Hunnam was like, I just don't think this is for me in my career right now. And he was having like, in a later interview, he said, I was having a dark night of the soul. I don't really think this is for me.
Was he in Sons of Anarchy yet?
No.
Oh, okay. So
I think he wanted to be more serious.
Yeah. I like Charlie Hunnam. I just don't think he's a star. Sorry, everybody. I just don't see it.
I think he's a TV star.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when they recast, Jason Segel rewrote the part for Russell Brand, because he went from being like this posh person. He's like, no, he needs to be a rock star, because that's what Russell Brand like brings.
And a Noel Gallagher kind of rock star.
Right. Because
that would be really intimidating. Like, it'd be one thing if he was like Ed Sheeran, but
right. And Noel Gallagher's name is dropped in this movie. Right? Russell Brand's like, the only time somebody's cheated on me was with Noel Gallagher and his brother.
Yeah. And so Noel Gallagher is a much better template as someone who is a romantic rival, because it's like
he's dirty but sexy.
Yeah. And like, that's so opposite of Jason's character is,
who's sweet and nerdy. And Jason Segel's basically your boy next door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's a character that both you and I kind of model the best parts of ourselves off of.
Yes. And even the worst parts of myself are kind of Jason Segel at times, where I'm like, man, I really just want to be lazy right now.
Yeah.
And I have to like keep myself from being that.
But you know, he does in his best days aspire for creativity, and mm-hmm. he likes being attentive, and he enjoys being a boyfriend where he gets to be a part of someone's world.
Right.
And Russell Brand's character, Aldous, is kind of the inverse of that, where
it's all about him.
Yeah, yeah. And he likes to have a wild lifestyle, and people can tag along if they want, but he's not going to go after someone else's life.
But he's also he's so kind in a certain respect, where he's just like, he has no, while having everything be about him, he has no ego.
Right.
Which is just that's what makes his character so unique.
It's really great writing, because we like to hate him, but we also like to like him.
Right, which is also Jason Segel's problem with him, where he, like, basically Sarah Marshall's there, Alda Snow is there, and as much throughout this movie as Jason Segel hates him for Kristen Bell cheating on him with this guy and breaking up with him for him, he's like, at one point in time, he's like, man, fuck, you're cool. I can't hate you.
Yeah.
And it frustrates him even more.
So the bulk of the movie is Mila Kunis, you know, turns into this kind of rebound love interest for Jason Segel, and he gets up the courage to keep pursuing her, and he gets more and more successful with her.
And she's the person that he needs, because she is the lowest maintenance, where Kristen Bell is much more high maintenance.
Yeah. And she's trying to get him out of his head. She's trying to get him to not worry so much as he does. And both you and I are like that. And our ladies do that too, where they're like, you need to not worry about it. Just enjoy life with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. Thanks, wives who are taking care of the babies right now.
Right.
Our wives are taking care of our babies.
Isn't that great?
We're dads.
We're dads now.
So, and
there's one half of the ping pong table where he's pursuing Mila Kunis, and the other half is him just dealing with Sarah Marshall being around with Alda Snow.
Yeah. And there's all these moments where, like, they're staying at the same resort, and so he keeps running into them, and they keep having interactions where, like, they have dinner together, or, you know, Alda Snow gets up and sings this song about being inside of Sarah Marshall, and Jason Segel just wrote this song. He's like, I was just thinking of the worst song you could possibly hear your ex's new lover sing to them out loud.
Yeah.
And you got these other characters, like, you got Taylor Wiley as Chemo, who's like this really big chef. And
he's
like,
so adorable.
He kind of takes Jason Segel under his wing. Mm-hmm.
Paul Rudd
is the like stoner surf instructor.
Yeah.
Kunu. Yeah, you're from London. And then you have Jonah Hill. Mm-hmm. I like Jonah Hill a lot.
Yeah.
I dislike his character in this movie so much.
Oh, really? He just felt like a part of the ensemble where it's like, this is
standard Apatow for me. And where it just, like, he almost feels like his comedy is lying outside of the film, where he's like, all right, so everything I'm doing right now is something a human being wouldn't say to another human being.
Well, yeah, he's pitched as much as Alda Snow is pitched, though.
Right, but this is my thing. This is like a kid who works for a Hawaiian resort versus an extremely eccentric rock star.
Yeah.
You can't have both of them be at the same comedy pitch.
Right. That's true.
Like, where he's like standing next to Jason Segel and he's like, I just went from 6 to 12. And it's like, why are you talking to this guy about your boner who you just met?
Yeah. And that's more like Superbad humor, where it's like, if everyone in Superbad is talking like that, we buy it. But if Jason Segel is going to be like, play it, lay in the cut kind of humor.
Yeah.
Having him do that, it's like, it's a little much. I can see your point.
And it's like I said, I like Jonah Hill. I think his drama work is even better than his comedy work, but
yeah,
it's the only thing about this movie that actually bothers me.
So his character in this is that he works for the resort and he wants Aldis. He like is in love with Aldis, and he's also a musician, and he tries to get his demo to Aldis, and Aldis,
which is what
like,
Get Him
care.
To the Greek is about, which is the sequel to this
movie. I thought he plays a different character in Get Him to the Greek.
He may.
I think he does.
But he plays like an assistant that really likes Russell Brand, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's a different character, but he's the same character.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the movie goes on, and it's filled with like moments where Jason Segel gets more and more courage to be himself and take chances and not like be the arm candy to a significant other, which is all part and parcel to him like getting over Sarah. And it culminates with like him and Mila Kunis basically having a fantastic night of sex.
Yeah.
And Russell Brand and Kristen Bell's relationship devolving and like them breaking up.
Well, the important pivot point is all this time we're thinking Jason Segel is the victim of this woman leaving him and destroying him and betraying him.
But there's another side to that story.
So he finds out that at first the story he knew was that Kristen Bell was leaving him. Sarah Marshall left him for Alda Snow. What he finds out from Aldis is she has been sleeping with Aldis for the past year and has been cheating on him for that long.
And on the other hand, like Kristen Bell, like when he like confronts her about this, they sit down and she's like, I tried so hard to fix our relationship. Like I was going to counseling. I was talking to people. I was, you know, doing all this stuff, but it doesn't necessarily excuse what she did.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, as soon as Aldis leaves her, Kristen Bell comes running back to Jason Segel,
mm-hmm.
who is like this sweet, safe space, and tries to get this emotionally vulnerable dude to sleep with her
mm-hmm.
in order to get him back. Mm-hmm. And he almost does it. But then there's like this very famous scene where she like is trying to get him to have sex, but he can't get it up.
Mm-hmm.
And she keeps like being critical of him. And she's like, I'll go down on you. And he's like, okay. But mm-hmm. nothing happens.
Yeah.
And she's like, what's wrong with you? And he does that line where he's like, well, maybe my dick just doesn't want to be around you.
Yeah.
And
which is so brilliantly insightful.
Yeah.
Like as crass humor as that is, it's actually pretty accurate to like male psychosexuality.
I'm going to come out like as a guy who this has happened to where I just got broken up with like mm-hmm. a couple weeks before and I was still hung up on this girl mm-hmm. and this other girl was like, hey, let's make out and stuff. And I just couldn't get sexually into it. And I just had to like cut the session short. Cause I'm like, this isn't going to happen. Like, and it was embarrassing and she was cool about it, but I felt super embarrassed. And it's the only time that it's ever happened to me. But I was just like, man, now I made this person feel bad because I wasn't ready to go somewhere with them.
Right. And it's that weird expectation that men should just be always ready
always
to go.
Hard.
And just like, and we're here in our 30s. We're like, it's a lot of pressure, you guys.
And you know, it's, like in this movie though, it serves like a very beautiful story note where he realizes like how much he is able to be manipulated and how little he is seeing what is good for him, which is actually Mila Kunis.
Yeah.
And so immediately afterwards he goes up to her when she's at work and he's like, hey, by the way, something happened. I want to be honest about it.
And he's completely transparent with her. What's your take objectively as this thing that he does? Do you think that was the right time to say it, or do you think he should have waited to tell her about this circumstance?
I don't think you tell her that at work.
Oh yeah. But that day,
I think where he is in his life, he needs to do this for him. I can see the argument for I'm all for truth.
Mm-hmm.
I can see the argument for saying she probably never would have known if he didn't tell her.
Yeah.
It just would have eaten away at him.
Yeah.
And so they might have had like a perfectly wonderful relationship with each other had he not told her that this had happened. But I'm all for truth. So
I don't want to rewrite the movie, but I'm going to just add on to this movie a little bit if I could have.
Well, an add-on is a rewrite.
Okay,
so let's play it.
You write your first draft with your heart. And you rewrite with your head.
I would have kept everything in, just added a little bit of a thing where one of the problems between Peter and Sarah Marshall is that he wasn't completely transparent with her, and it could have been an incident for them where he lied by omission to her one time, and that was one of the things that could have caused them problems. And with Mila Kunis, he'd be like, all right, I'm not going to make the same mistake twice.
And it could have even been like not only an instance, but like a repeating thing where she was like, hey, do you like this hat? And he was like, yeah, I love this hat.
Yeah.
And whether it was a good thing like that he was doing for her feelings, or it was a bad thing where he was like, just didn't want to complicate their relationship by being honest. It could have been that thing that made their relationship worse than it could have been.
Right.
Yeah. I think that I like that rewrite.
Yeah. So, he makes that confession and you know, it's just, I really like they have the typical, like, she is upset about this story. Mila Kunis, she's like, okay, well, I don't want to deal with you anymore. We're done.
I think her acting in this scene is really good though.
Yeah.
Cause she's really holding back. I think Mila Kunis is great in this movie.
Yeah,
she's holding back tears.
The plot demands that they break up because it's the end of the second act and they need to have that. He needs to have that breakup with the love interest.
And I love this scene so much because it is both prescriptive, but not in a bad way,
mm-hmm.
where he acts, I think, pretty perfectly.
Yeah.
Where he's like, no, please. And she's like, look, I don't want you to write or call or do anything. And once she like puts a period on it, he's like, okay. and he walks away. But the one thing he does do is he goes to this bar. There's this earlier, I think it's one of the best scenes in the movie, where they go to the bar and he ends up, she gets him to go on stage and sing a song from the Dracula musical that he's writing, mm-hmm. which was one of the first songs like I learned to play on the piano when I was like, you know what? I'm going to play my own music on the piano, not what like, you know.
Dear listener, I've heard this song more times than I can
count. Way too many times. But he does see in this bar that there's a bunch of pictures of girls taking their tops off in this
They're flashing
bathroom.
The camera.
They're flashing the camera. And it's something that like the bartender keeps up in the bathroom. And so Jason Segel goes back to that bar after she breaks up with him, steals the picture of her on the wall that she was like, I hate that it's up there, yeah. but you know.
And he so gets he gets his ass kicked.
Gets his ass kicked, brings it back to her, doesn't ask anything more, but does like this noble sacrifice thing where she doesn't ask for it necessarily, but mm-hmm. he wants to prove to her how much she means to him, but still that he's going to like honor her wishes by not contacting her after that.
Yeah.
And so then he goes back to New York,
Los Angeles. And he works on his, Dracula musical uh-huh. with puppets. And uh-huh. it's awesome. It's really fun and really wonderful. And we see it happen and he invites her
to
go out.
The montage is fantastic too. Mm-hmm. The montage of him like writing the musical.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
So what's interesting is this is
500 Days of Summer.
This is the same beat as 500 Days of Summer.
And but why do you like it more?
I like it more here. I don't know. It just feels more himself to do this. Like we're in 500 Days of Summer. He's idolizing Summer
uh-huh.
and he's that's why torpedoes the relationship is that he puts her on a pedestal
right
and then he's like you
and
know
he doesn't
what?
Listen to her because she's like I'm not into this
yeah.
and he's like well maybe I'll make you into this
and I see in that movie and I know the movie didn't mean to do this but it's just like okay now he's just going to put his job on a pedestal and that's how I saw the final moments in that movie he's like well I'm just going to focus on my career then but Jason Segel in this movie it's not that he's focusing on his career. He's just focusing on trying to find his best self.
And I think very instrumentally, like without meeting Mila Kunis, he wouldn't have, and without having the breakup happen for Sarah Marshall, he wouldn't have reached that ground zero that a lot of artists need to reach in order mm-hmm. to be like, no, I'm going to commit myself to something that might be dumb, but it's the most me and it's how I'm going to find myself, which is strikingly similar still to 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that different.
Yeah, I don't know. It just works great in this movie.
I'm really interested to rewatch that movie and see if it still hits you the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what I appreciated the most is that it's not necessarily he needed to do something. It's that he just needed to be who he needed to be. And right. When he was with Sarah, he was stuck in this rut where he was just a layabout.
Yeah, he wasn't only a layabout, but he was basically a human purse part
yeah.
of the time.
And his job was just doing like normal tones,
who's
not
that,
music.
Who's that guy? Yeah, dark ominous tones.
Yeah.
Who's that guy that plays like the sound recordist?
That's the like garbage guy from Parks and Rec.
That's right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. He's really good at it. I think he's also an Apatow.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
one of the
circle,
part of the
inner circle.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's what you nailed it where he's just becoming that creative self that he couldn't be unless he had this encounter with Mila Kunis.
And then he puts on this extremely adorable like Muppet style mm-hmm. play that's about like Dracula falling in love and like it makes Van Helsing the bad guy and
yeah
they're singing and this is the whole I don't know if Jason Segel like did this and got the attention of the Jim Henson Company because Henson made all the Muppets for
what
for
was
this
the other
show.
Is it studio no there's another Muppet show that was really famous back
oh,
in the day.
Avenue Q.
I was wondering if he enlisted any of those people to help out.
I don't know. I don't think so. Because I know that like the people at Jim Henson Studio were the ones that like taught them also how to do the Muppets and stuff.
But the show that he puts on is so Peter.
It is.
It's so himself. And I think that's the difference that I didn't get at the end of 500 Days of Summer, where I just saw him get cleaned up and put on a suit and go get mm-hmm. it for a job interview. It's like, what is that telling me about this character? But the show that Peter's putting on, it's so creative and it's so him.
Days, the day when you're on the streets of London, I come to slay. Here I am. I'll leave you bleeding in my dungeon. I'll never obey. I'll rip out your esophagus.
Van Helsing, listen to me. He's just a man who wishes to be free.
Right. And it's not like the greatest show of all time, but it's something that
he would be proud of to the end of his days.
Yes, very much. And then Mila Kunis, like he doesn't write her, he doesn't email her, he doesn't call her, but he does send her an invitation to come see this mm-hmm. play if she wants to. And she like comes back and she dropped out of school, we found out at one point in time, for a boy and moved. That's how she got to Hawaii. And mm-hmm. so she's back like looking at schools and she's looking to move on with her life. And mm-hmm. they kiss when he's naked and it's like a good bookend.
And it's really kind of adorable that he is totally literally naked with her. Yeah. Just totally literally vulnerable.
Yeah. And it's great.
So we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back for Trope Talk.
Welcome to Forgetting Sarah Marshall's Trope Talk. It's like cock talk, because we see Jason Segel's penis. Three times.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty accurate. Pretty accurate. What's our trope today?
So our trope is The Dark Night of the Soul.
Mm-hmm. In the rom-com version.
Yes, because you can have this in... you know, action movie, superhero movies. There's often a Dark Night of the Soul. You don't really get it in thrillers as much, maybe in dramas mm-hmm. more so. Like the whole movie Calvary is basically about a Dark Night of a Soul. Mystery shows sometimes. But in rom-coms, it's basically when a character reaches rock bottom. And it's generally after you think they're going to succeed, but then they do something to put like their plot foot in their plot mouth. It's the pride wagging the story dog at the fall.
Yeah. And it's usually it's about the couple needing to break up so that they can have whatever flaw that's been bugging them has to be fully addressed finally.
Right. So with this movie, it's Jason Segel, not only like he has a perfect thing going for him, but then the thing that is wrong with him is he just doesn't stand up for himself. He doesn't know what he wants. He doesn't know how to commit to something that he truly wants. And so he goes back to sleeping with Sarah because that's where it's safe. And mm-hmm. he likes living where it's safe, on the couch with Sarah Marshall, because she likes him and it makes him feel wanted, to be wanted by somebody who's so pretty and successful.
Right. And it's so cozy, but it's, you gotta face your fears.
Yeah, you have to progress. You have to move on as a human. You have to jump off the cliff, which is something that he does in this movie, where he like commits to jumping off the cliff.
And I really related to everything he was not going through relationally, but just that basic idea of you can't stay in your safe, comfy zone, because like last month I quit my job mm-hmm. and it was mm-hmm. like I was making enough money that it was taking care of us, and I would just go in for 8 hours and do my basic work and then it's fine. But it was,
but fulfilled you were not.
Yeah. And it was killing me, but like to take the next step felt like jumping off a cliff. And that metaphor of him like just falling off the cliff, he got off of it. He got into the water, and he got into the water with this beautiful woman. And I have my beautiful woman, but this new career is my other beautiful woman.
Well, I was more your beautiful woman because I kept trying to push you off this cliff.
That's right. Yeah, you're my Mila Kunis.
You know, she actually like cut her neck on one of those jumps. And so when Jason Segel's holding her when they're kissing each other, she was actually bleeding from her neck. Yikes. And he was just like helping her keep her neck up.
Oh my gosh.
But in this genre, we see it all the time. We were talking about Family Stone not too long ago, mm-hmm. and it's where Sarah Jessica Parker, who's not even the main character of this story, has the dark night of the soul where she's like, you know, kind of like bigotous and puts her foot in her mouth at this family dinner. And she is like, she realizes that the guy who like she's dating doesn't really love her, doesn't stand up for her. And so it's not until she gets drunk at a bar with the other brother who she's more crushing on right now that she actually finds out who she really is. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's a Sherpa in The Dark Night of the Soul where it's not only you realizing for yourself what's going on, but it's somebody else pointing this, like holding the lantern to help you through this dark time, where it's in that movie, it's Luke Wilson. In this movie, it's Mila Kunis. In,
well, Notting Hill,
it's Riz Ifans,
and because he has to retell this whole story to all of his friends of what he did of rejecting Julia Roberts. And at first they're kind of supportive, but then he starts coming around to realizing what a mistake it is. They're like, yeah, you messed up. And they get him to recover. They get him there.
So in 5-year engagement, Riz Ifans actually plays the Aldous Snow character with Jason Segel.
Perfect.
So anyway, sorry, that was a full circle.
So lots of Riz Ifans.
Yes.
As Sherpa of Dark Knight of the Soul.
Yeah, maybe. I think he's the antagonist in that movie.
Oh, okay.
But yes, so that's Dark Knight of the Soul, and I think it's pulled off pretty beautifully in this film.
Yeah, because like we had said before the break, that we see him contend with who he is and how these women affected him and what he's going to do about it and right. how he's going to live his life, not in dependence of these other people, but how he's going to live a life for himself.
And he shows by like going to get that picture off the wall that he's willing to risk his own comfort and safety to make somebody else's life better rather than just being like, okay, I guess I'll go be where it's safe at my house or in my room and just leave and be okay. And so we get a good development of character after this Dark Knight.
Yeah. And a lot of the Dark Knights, especially in relationships, the characters can realize what mistake they had been truly making where they weren't really aware of it. But breakups do that to you, I'm told. I've never dealt with it. But you realize what your chief flaw in these relationships were and you pivot.
Right. And if you're going to become a better person for that next person you're with, you have to face it, deal with it, and like overcome it somehow, or like at least accept it as part of you and say, I'm going to be better at this thing.
Yeah. And I think what bugged me about the movie that I really love is 500 Days of Summer, what bugged me is that I'm not sure if you learned your lesson of you weren't listening to Summer. And
no,
I don't know if you're going to be listening to
Autumn. Is that her name? Spring?
No, her name is Autumn.
Winter?
It's
okay.
Like, yeah. Come on, guys. But I think you're going to make the same exact mistake with Autumn.
Yeah, I don't think he's changed much.
Yeah, just, and what we like about our rom-coms is our characters growing to be these romantic heroes.
And I love this movie so much because as far as pacing is concerned, this movie takes its time.
Yeah.
Like really getting to that place.
Yeah.
It's a long movie for a rom-com. This is like an hour and 45 minutes maybe?
Yeah, but it's perfectly paced.
Yeah. Speaking of perfect timing, I received just a couple minutes ago, right before we started recording, your essay that you wrote for our Patreon.
Oh, but how did you get it?
I got it because I was changing my baby.
Oh, and, sure.
And I opened up her stinky poopy diaper and I don't know how, but the train man somehow put your essay in. I had to clean it off.
Yeah.
It was real gross. But once I did get all the excrement and
it's like she smuggled it out of prison or something.
Exactly. It came straight from my baby's butt to my hands. And I read it and it was actually a lot better than the poop.
So it wasn't bullshit.
No, it wasn't bullshit. It was a lot of reviews. You basically wrote 3 reviews of different movies that you went to see in theaters recently. Mm-hmm. And you kind of advocated for why you should see these movies in theaters. And those movies are the most recent James Bond, No Time to Die. You can't die because you just don't have time for it.
There ain't no time to die.
And then French Dispatch, the most recent Wes Anderson movie. Mm-hmm. And Dune, the sand film.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like 3, not necessarily the most concise, nor the most like long-winded essays that you've ever written. Just 3 really well-written reviews and why seeing them in theaters was a really good experience.
Mm-hmm.
And why other people should see them in theaters.
Especially Dune.
Yeah.
Please go see Dune in a movie theater, preferably in IMAX.
The biggest theater you can.
It is. I mean, even if you don't like it, it's an experience. It's kind of like Avatar, where people can't watch Avatar now.
but we did all have to go see it in theaters.
You had like, to see it.
When we did our taxes that year, we didn't realize that one of the checkboxes were,
did you see Avatar?
In order to get your refund, you need to have seen Avatar. So before filing, make sure you go watch it.
And Dune's story is much better than Avatar, but it's just kind of like, you don't go to see a story per se. You go for an experience. And that's
story
what Avatar
is a bonus,
was.
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my contribution this week to our Patreon. We make weekly contributions. We do essays every week. You could read my reviews as part of it. Do you think you've got an idea for next week? You want to give a little preview for maybe what you might want to write about next week, Kelly?
Yeah, I think what I'm actually going to do is post up a couple page script of
ooh.
Like, it's not it's not like a script that I've actually written, but it's just going to be, if you're interested in seeing what scripts look like, I'm going to document a day in the life of Kelly as a dad.
I love it.
As script.
Yeah. Because that's great. That's really great.
I just really wanted to film, like, I keep listening to these songs and singing certain songs to my kid. Mm-hmm. And all I want to do is like make a small commercial of me being up at every single hour of the day with my child.
Yeah.
I feel like it'd be a coffee commercial more than anything, but, yeah, I don't know. I just really feel like, writing a script. So I think I'm going to write a tiny comedy script about me and taking care of my tiny, really cryy child.
I think it would be actually really fun and cute to write a coffee commercial in the, not in the literal style, but in a style of a nursery rhyme. Cause I think you could make something catchy, but also film a commercial for that. And it's the glory of being a parent of like sleep deprivation and all these things.
Coffee. I've loved coffee so much over the past lifetime, but I've never loved it so much as when I've been a dad.
There's something so transforming of being sleep deprived in the chemical combination of caffeine from coffee hitting your sleep deprivation. It gets you into this weird awake stage where it's like you can see the musical colors. Notes. Oh.
Yeah. What's the weirdest thing that you've sung to your child?
Like as a nursery rhyme or just music in general?
No, like as a nursery rhyme. Like, because there's, I've sung so many different things to my kid at this point, but the other day it was like 2 a.m. and I was just like, meow mix. And I just went and chicken, deliver. I just like sang it as a lullaby. And I was like, I don't know why the fuck this is in my head right now, but it's necessary.
Well, there were times where Theo needed swaying and he also needed music. And I was just like, okay, exit the warrior, today's Tom Soy, he gets high on you.
Because you have to kind of make it a little bit more like gentle, major yeah. chords. Yeah.
So yeah, definitely some Rush. I've sang some Rush to my boy.
I thought you were going
to
be like, watch out. You don't know what you're after. Cool, baby.
So also on the Patreon is our poll, which is now being summed up. We are finalizing the poll. Today is the last.
Today is Halloween, All Hallows Eve.
So I'm curious, Kelly, do we have a winner?
So basically every month, our patrons get to pick one week. They get to pick one of our movies and we have a poll up. And this month it was real spooky, scary. We had The Devil Wears Prada. We had Practical Magic. We had Warm Bodies. We had So I Married an Axe Murderer. And we actually tied.
What? Are we going to do both the movies?
That's what we've done in the past. If we did tie, we have to do both of the films.
Okay, so what's our tie?
Our ties are The Devil Wears Prada and Practical Magic.
Oh, hell yeah.
Which is great,
yeah.
Because I wanted to do both of those. I wanted to do all these movies, but I really wanted to do both of those. So which one are we doing next week?
We'll do Practical Magic first, just to ride off the fumes of Halloween.
Sure. I like that idea. And then the next week after that will be Devil Wears Prada. So, hey, you have your homework cut out for you. Like, this is the Thanksgiving break where you know what's coming the next week. You have a lot, many more days to do your homework over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. So it's November now. So for our next poll, it's T-Hanksgiving. So your options are Joe versus the Volcano, Joe versus
no,
the Volcano.
No, let's actually.
I want to do this for Robin because it's her favorite movie. And she deserves her favorite movie as a podcast because she just had a baby. I want to give her a gift.
Okay, but then I don't think it should be a movie poll then. I think we should just do T. Hanksgiving, Joe versus the Volcano.
Yeah.
But like our patrons deserve a poll.
Should we do a, what should it be then?
Can we do holiday movies that aren't about like Christmas holiday?
Well, I'm trying to think. There's not enough Thanksgiving rom-coms out there, or we've already done enough of them.
Like how Sleepless in Seattle feels like a Thanksgiving film for some reason.
Should we do
Sleepless in Seattle again?
Guys. Should we do an extra Tom Hanks movie?
Double Hanks.
Yeah, and it could be a non-rom-com Hanks.
Okay. Well, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be a non-rom-com, but it can be a...
Because we've got...
We got the Larry Crown affair.
We got Larry Crown.
We've got Splash.
I mean,
we've got the Money Pit.
Yeah.
And we've got Turner and Hooch.
Okay. Okay, great.
Wow. I just did that.
Yeah. T-Hanksgiving. Those are your options.
Yeah. And we will be doing at some, I feel like we have our entire month planned out at this point in time, except for the patron movie poll.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. I love it.
But
it'll
be a double Hanks, but T-Hanksgiving will be an extra episode that this year, as always.
Wait,
you get it on Thanksgiving.
Wasn't there something in the news where Tom Hanks like crashed somebody's wedding?
Oh,
this month?
He's done it a bunch of times.
I love that. I would love if he did that at my wedding.
I know. He's great.
I actually asked Robin if she would like Tom Hanks to crash our baby giving birth. And just
like
in case
he
I ended
can show up.
Yeah, I think that would be the only person she'd be like, okay, because he would, you know, he'd get down next to the bed and be like, you can do this. We'll get through this together.
So actually, Tom Hanks was the person I asked Sarah, like, who would you geek out about the way that Jonah Hill in this movie is geeking out about Aldous? Who would you be like so obsessed with the way that he is obsessed with?
I
would.
And it's Tom Hanks.
It would be Tom Hanks, where I'd be like, oh man, I would just not be able to control myself.
Yeah, yeah, that would be pretty. I think mine would be, maybe it'd be Tom Hanks as well. I think that'd be the same for Robin. Maybe we're just all very similar in our celebrity love.
And it'll be Tom Hanks. So this month in November on Thanksgiving Day, you're going to get our episode for T. Hanksgiving. Be Joe versus the Volcano, starring Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan.
And then after that, you'll get either the Larry Crown Affair, Splash, the
it's
Money
not
Pit.
The Larry Crown Affair. It's just Larry Crown.
Oh, the
That's
Thomas
the
Crown
Thomas
Affair.
Crown.
I'm going to call it that.
The Larry Crown Affair.
And Turner and Hooch. And so if you want to vote for one of those, go over to our Patreon, patreon.com/romcomgents. And you can also check out our bonus episodes this month. Next week, in fact, we're going to be releasing our season 2 episode of The Gilmore Girls, where we cover second season of Gilmore
second
Girls
season.
Because we can't stop. We just can't stop talking about Gilmore Girls.
You just can't stop.
Do we have a letter this week, Ryan?
I don't know if it's a letter necessary.
Let's play the theme anyway.
Okay.
Hey, Flo.
Huh?
Mail come. Got mail for you.
Oh, Pete, you've got mail.
You sent me a letter.
You've got mail.
Speaking of Gilmore Girls, we are guests on the Tickets Please pod, where we talked Gilmore Girls.
Yes, we did.
All Gilmore Girls talk.
All Gilmore, all the time.
So go check out Catherine and Alexa's Tickets Please podcast.
I had a ton of fun.
It was such a good episode, and go check out their podcast. I listened to their episode on Twilight. They had really good things to say, and obviously had insights that we didn't because we were not part of the demographic when that came out.
Right. Yeah, I think Alexa says she's watched it through 4 times.
Yeah.
And we're only on our second watch through.
Yeah. So,
Go check that out. And then I think one of these weeks, maybe the Devil Wears Prada episode, we're going to have P.S. I Love Rom-Coms. Mm-hmm.
I told them it's guest choice. So I think they might be the next one after that.
Oh, okay. Great. So, come check us out in over the next 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. Come. And you know what? At the same time, also give us a review. If you're not going to sign up for Patreon, which is real cheap, real fun. We got a lot of stuff going on over there. But if you decide not to do that, go write a review. Pause this podcast. Go write a review for us on Apple Podcasts right now. 5 stars would be great. 5 stars would be best, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the most.
If the review is these guys rock, you don't even have to spell it right.
You can just hit rock.
Yeah.
Like, and then we'll play paper and we'll win, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want, say rock equal scissors. So we have to do whatever you
do
want
whatever
with rocks, papers, or
best.
Scissors, but give us a review because it would really, 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 really help us out.
It would really help.
Thank
and
you.
It would be a nice holiday gift these days. And it's the spirit of giving.
It's the spirit of T. Hanksgiving.
Do it. If not for us, do it for Tom Hanks.
Do it for Tom Hanks. He deserves it. At this point, don't you think he deserves it?
He deserves some lauding.
He's been your dad for so long.
Hey, well, speaking of lauding, ask me the question.
Do you think that anybody in this movie deserves a rom-com Oscar? I turned it into a question.
You did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I think the music should have a question mark in it, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that... Can I say this movie has the best sexuality.
Ooh, talk more about that.
You wouldn't think this movie would be lauded for its sexuality.
But you'd be a dink if you didn't.
There's sex scenes in this movie that aren't, they're not like graphic sex scenes.
No, they're all for humor. Funny sex scenes, yeah.
They're all so, the sexuality in this movie is so telling about its characters.
Yes, they do tell a lot of story through their characters.
Yeah.
Where like any time that Aldis and Kristen Bell are having sex, it's just like the most like crazy monkey sex of your life,
mm-hmm.
sex. But then when Peter and Mila Kunis have sex, it's like fun, casual, but like also getting back at Sarah mm-hmm. Marshall sex.
Mm-hmm.
It's all telling a story.
Yeah. And like Mila Kunis's thing to Peter every time is like, get out of your head, stop worrying. And like him and Mila Kunis are going at it. And he's like, wait, I just want to make sure. And she's like, shut up.
Yeah. Just have sex with me
and just be in the moment with me. Don't worry so much. Just mm-hmm. be present. And yeah. that's what she gets out of him.
And that's what he is able to finally get to.
And the story beat of Sarah Marshall cheating on Peter, it's so much truer to relationships that affairs aren't just these isolated things where someone was just really horny and that's what's going on. It's right. There's so much
it
more
talks about more in the relationship.
There's so much more to relationship where it's like the affair part is the end result of a lot of bad things that have been stewing, and it's someone's way of escaping, and it's hurtful and it's not what you want people doing, but it actually is. It says a lot more, whereas other movies are just like, well, I was just so hot. And it's like, yeah. No.
I think one of the things that couples who have had to deal with this find out is like, it sucks. Nobody wants to be cheated on. Nobody like really wants to spend time cheating on somebody else, I think. But if it didn't happen, those things a lot of times, I believe, would just stay buried in relationships and be maybe more poisonous.
Yeah.
Not that cheating is good, but I think sometimes unfortunately necessary.
And it
not necessary, but you know what I'm saying?
Well, we've seen in other stories where it's a lot of times it's a human's last
resort.
And only
it's an escape.
Last and only option.
Mm-hmm.
Because we see with Sarah, she tried so hard to fix this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it was her only way of getting out was this way.
It's like what's his name in The Best Man,
yeah,
where it's he didn't even cheat on his girlfriend, but he's like, the only way for me to get out of it is to basically invite this super hot stripper that I met last night to this wedding and be like, I'm with her now, I'm gonna go be safe over here, and it's the only way I can escape this relationship.
Yeah And so there are other movies where I'm like, do better characters, because it's like, well, I couldn't help myself. It's like, really? That's your reason? But with Sarah Marshall, it's like, I don't like that you had to do it, but I get you and I understand you. So very, all of the psychosexuality in this movie is true and honest and human for such a big comedy.
Yeah. Great Oscar. And that's two sexy Oscars for you in a row, because last time it was Best Foreplay.
Ah, yeah.
For me, I think I'm going to give this Best Comedy.
Yeah.
Like if in the Kids' Choice Awards, this is Best Comedy or Musical, Best Comedy. Or I guess that's Golden Globes. But there's some moments that don't land, like I was talking about with the Jonah Hill moments, but I think every single actor in this movie is funny. I think everybody is given a lot of opportunity. We didn't even talk about the characters of, what are their names? Jack McBrayer and
The Newlyweds.
Yeah, and what's her name?
It's one of those faces that you've seen her everywhere.
Yeah, but that couple, they're like the newlywed couple that don't know how to have sex with each other, but they're trying and trying and trying, and it sucks and sucks and sucks because they're also like a Christian couple that's never had sex before, and they're just like, it's gonna be magical, and then it isn't magical because sex actually does take work, and you're not an expert at it when you first start having sex.
And I'll just say, I relate. And I really like the moment where his character is getting advice from Aldous.
Aldous Snow, and they're having sex with the chess.
Yeah, and it's like another cool moment for Aldous, because like he has to explain to him, it's like, oh well, because of my religion, I haven't been able to.
He's
practice.
Like, no, God's in the bedroom,
and Aldous like, oh right, cool. He doesn't.
There's no judgment.
There's what's the inverse of slut shaming of like someone's like, oh, because of your religion, you couldn't have sex.
It's more like sexual encouragement.
Yeah. And he's like, it's cool. No worries. No judgment. And yeah. It's like, this is the arch villain in this movie. And he's being like a really cool dude.
Yeah. Know? And it's a great moment. And you're right. Like, we didn't talk about how their sex story. We see them having sex in their bed like 3 or 4 times where it just like cuts back to them. And it's such a thing that like, it feels like it could also be in the movie. Like this is a more updated version of Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
Where like there's not a conceit like in Some Like It Hot, but there's all these different characters just going through different weird things. Mm-hmm. And when they start off and it just hurts and he's like, you know, God planned bodies wrong. And then later on, they like consummate and have a really nice sexual experience, which is great.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So speaking of consummation, can you tell me who you fell in love with?
Are there any circumstances in which the two of you might be more than just good friends?
The truth of it is, I've loved you from the first second I met you.
But mostly I hate the way I don't hate you. Not even close. Not even a little bit. Not even at all.
You have bewitched me, body and soul. And I love, and love, and love you. I know.
I think I'm going to go with Mila Kunis, Rachel Jansen. She is really chill. She's very encouraging. She like not only like is like get up on the stage and get up on the stage, Sharita, but she also like goes out on a hike when she's like, oh, I heard that sucks, but let's do it because you want to do it. Mm-hmm. And she I think she stands up for herself when she's been slighted, and not in a mean way, but just in a way that's like real honest. And I also think Mila Kunis is a rockin' bod.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go with Sarah Marshall.
Oh,
because I think this movie does make the effective argument of she's not a bad person.
No,
it's just a relationship that didn't go right. And
not only didn't go right, but they aren't right for each other. Because yeah. He's sensitive and she's less so. Mm-hmm. She's not sensitive enough for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they get along really well because I think they're both kind of anxious people and they relate to each other on that, and they know what each other is going through.
That's good insight.
They're both artists, so they have that problem, but they're too similar.
Yeah.
Because Mila Kunis is like, you need to not worry and just like get some out of the house.
Kristen Buff probably couldn't do because she's too focused on her own insecurities.
Yeah. And so I feel like I could be a good man to Sarah Marshall, where it's like, I understand what you're going through, and I don't, maybe I would have the same problem of being too similar to Peter, and maybe we'd be doomed as well.
Sure.
But I could see myself falling in love with her very easily because she's beautiful, but also is creative. And there's something about, I want to support her because she's feeling insecure about her career woes. Uh-huh. And it's like, I can see where you're feeling that and just want to be there for her. I could see myself being there for her.
Sure. So, I love that. Yeah. That's real sweet.
She is a fictional character though, so it's not going to happen.
Well, who knows? I mean,
and I'm married. So,
I mean, but like the universe is a vast and complicated place. Who knows what could happen?
I need a Doctor Strange to come in. Like, give me that multiverse. Make that
give
possible.
Me that multiverse where I get to hook up with Sarah Marshall.
Sarah Marshall. Make that possible.
Apparently a lot of women got upset at the advertising for this movie because there were a bunch of billboards up that like were saying a bunch of mean things about Sarah Marshall.
Oh, right.
And there were so many people named Sarah Marshall that like they were writing in and being like, you can't like draw a circle around my name and point to it. And it said like whore or something like that because they were going for like a journal type thing.
That's right. They were like showing like Peter's like, you know, freak out and writing, you know, drawing mustaches on his ex and stuff like that. And I remember people getting really upset because out of context, that can just look really misogynistic.
Sure. Yeah.
But in context, like, it makes sense. But I remember the marketing being revised for that and them just kind of striking that and not having it.
And I think it's just an Apatow production type deal where he's like, I'm gonna get at like people's like buttons by being a little bit more crass.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit more edgy.
Yeah. There's this like 79-year-old lady who was quoted as saying, the language just wasn't to my taste.
All right. Sorry, Mrs. Tolkien, but
Mrs. Tolkien?
Well, you know, language, and, you know, it's not for her, you know.
She wasn't philologically against it.
I think philologically she had a problem with it. It's that the language literally wasn't to taste.
The construction of language. Oh, fine, whatever. All right, well, next week we're watching
Practical Magic.
And it's filmed in the place where Robin and I got married. We got to go hang out in that town, Coopville.
There you go.
Yeah, you were there too.
I was there.
You watched us get married.
I had a good time.
But yeah, Ryan, I love you, and let's go on a vacation sometime if both of our wives break up with us.
I love you so much, I would not leave you if I saw your penis.
And this is where we will say a goodbye.
Ryan and Kelly must bid you adieu. Thank you for listening to our review. Subscribe, we'll even take a bribe. See you next week on A Gentleman's Guide to Rom-Coms.